This article is brought to you by the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time, The Black Book of Eamon Blackthorne. Because the right words, at the right moment, change everything. Strategies to keep discussions objective and respectful. How emotional control turns heated conflict into productive conversation. In short, emotional control in conflict is not about going cold or staying silent. It is about staying present without being reactive. Your emotions are information, not instructions. You choose what to do with them. Objectivity is not the absence of feeling. It is the discipline to speak from fact rather than from heat. A clear, repeatable process makes this possible even in your hardest conversations. Definition: emotional control strategies are deliberate techniques for recognizing, regulating, and redirecting your emotional responses during conflict. They allow you to remain engaged and clear-headed, so discussions stay focused on the issue at hand rather than collapsing into personal attack or defensive shutdown. I watched a senior manager lose his best team member over a conversation that lasted 11 minutes. He was not cruel. He was not dishonest. He simply let his frustration take the wheel the moment he felt challenged, and the words that followed, though they were never intended as an attack, landed like one. The other person walked out and never came back fully. That manager told me afterwards that he had known something was wrong inside him the moment the conversation started. He just had no system for what to do with that knowledge. That is the real problem with emotional control in conflict. It is not ignorance. Most people know they're getting activated. What they lack is a practical method for staying objective and respectful in the exact moment when doing so feels almost impossible. This article gives you that method, step by step. Why staying objective feels like fighting your own brain. The difficulty is not a character flaw, it is biology. When a conversation starts to feel like a threat, your brain responds faster than your conscious mind can reason. Your heart rate climbs, your attention narrows. The part of your brain that is brilliant at survival becomes a poor host for nuanced dialogue. If you have ever read about the amygdala hijack, and how it silently blocks team performance in high-pressure moments, you already know how quickly this can happen without you even noticing. The catch is that the harder you try to suppress the feeling, the louder it gets. Suppression is not a strategy. It is a delay with interest. What we are after is something different: recognition and redirection, not denial. What needs to be in place before the conversation starts? Two things must be true before any of the steps below will work. First, you need to know your personal triggers, not in a vague sense, but specifically. Is it when someone dismisses your input without engaging it? Is it a particular tone of voice? A feeling of being talked over? You cannot manage a trigger you have not named. Spend 5 minutes before your next difficult conversation writing down what is most likely to provoke you. That act of naming shifts the trigger from something that happens to you to something you're watching for. Second, you need to accept that objectivity is not neutrality. You are allowed to have a view. You are allowed to care deeply about the outcome. Emotional control strategies do not ask you to become indifferent. They ask you to stay grounded enough to express your position clearly, without the heat doing damage you did not intend. A step-by-step process for keeping discussions objective and respectful. Step 1. Set your intention before you walk in. Before any difficult conversation, state your purpose out loud, even if only to yourself. Not the outcome you want, the purpose. I want to understand what happened and find a way forward we can both live with. Saying it aloud is not a ritual. It is a physiological anchor. It gives your brain a target other than self-protection, and it shifts your posture from combative to curious before a word has been exchanged. Step 2. Build in a physical reset at the first sign of activation. The moment you feel your chest tighten, your voice rise, or your thoughts start racing toward counter-arguments, pause. Not a dramatic pause. A breath. One slow exhale, through the nose, longer than the inhale. This is not a relaxation exercise. It is a direct interruption to the stress response, and it works in seconds. If the conversation is already in motion, you can say, "Give me a moment to think about that." No one ever lost respect from asking for a moment to think. People lose respect by saying things they cannot take back. Understanding how amygdala hijack signs show up in real time can help you recognize the moment you need this reset before it is too late. Step 3. Name the feeling to yourself, not to the room. There is a significant difference between internal labeling and emotional venting. Internal labeling means recognizing, privately, what is happening. I'm feeling dismissed right now, or that comment made me angry. This simple act of naming reduces the intensity of the emotional signal. You are not performing calm. You are genuinely becoming a little karma, because your prefrontal cortex re-engages the moment you use language to describe an experience rather than react to it. Do not announce your emotion as an accusation. I feel dismissed can be useful. You always dismiss me is a different conversation entirely, and it is the one you are trying to avoid. Step 4. Anchor your words to facts and shared goals. Once you are steady enough to speak, choose language rooted in observable reality rather than interpretation. The difference is small but crucial. Instead of, you clearly do not care about this project. Say, I noticed the deadline was missed, and I want to understand what got in the way. Instead of, you always interrupt me. Say, I want to finish this point before we move on. This kind of language does not avoid conflict. It keeps the conflict about the actual problem rather than spiraling into character assessments neither of you can resolve in the room. Connecting the conversation to a shared goal, we both want this team to work well, gives both people something to move toward instead of away from. Emotional intelligence in feedback conversations explores how this same principle applies when giving critical feedback. Step 5. Listen to respond thoughtfully, not to win. This is where many people fail, including me, many times over. We stop listening the moment we begin preparing our counterargument. You can hear someone speaking and not absorb a word they said. Real listening in a conflict requires you to practice something harder than silence. It requires you to stay genuinely open to the possibility that the other person's account of events has merit. Ask one clarifying question before you respond to any significant point. Help me understand what you mean by that is not weakness. It is the mark of someone who intends to get this right rather than simply win the round. Psychological safety enables this kind of honest exchange only when both people trust that speaking clearly will not be punished. Step 6. Redirect when a conversation drifts into heat. Conversations under emotional pressure have a tendency to escalate in a spiral. Someone says something slightly sharp, the other person responds in kind, and within 3 exchanges, you're debating events from 18 months ago while the original issue sits unaddressed. Learn to redirect. Not aggressively, but clearly. I want to come back to what we were discussing. What can we do from here? That one sentence, said calmly, does more to return a conversation to objectivity than any argument about who's right. De-escalating team conflict without destroying the working relationship requires exactly this kind of confident, measured redirection. Step 7. Close the conversation with a clear agreement. The end of a difficult conversation is as important as the beginning. Without a clear close, people walk away with different versions of what was decided, and old tensions resurface the next time there is friction. Before you leave the room, summarize what was agreed in plain language and confirm the other person heard it the same way. So we are agreed you will send me the report by Thursday, and I will give you feedback within 24 hours. Does that match what you understood? Simple. Direct. It respects both people's time and closes the loop cleanly. Adapting this process for remote and hybrid teams. Virtual conflict has a specific texture. The camera flattens tone. Silence is read as hostile when they are not. Facial expressions are harder to read on a screen, which means misreadings accumulate faster. The good news is that remote settings offer a built-in reset mechanism. You can mute yourself and take a breath without the other person seeing it. You can type a response and delete it before you send it. If a video call escalates badly, you can say, I think this needs more space than a call allows. Can we put our main points in writing and speak again tomorrow? That pause is not avoidance. It is responsible emotional management. Emotional intelligence and its role in team dynamics becomes even more critical in distributed teams, where you have fewer of the natural social cues that regulate conversation in person. A quick note before we continue. Most people leave the hardest conversations for last and regret the words they used when they finally had them. The best-selling book 8 Right Every Time gives you 115 tested scripts for those exact moments, the ones that shape careers, relationships, and how people remember you. Get your copy at emonblackthorne.com. Now, back to the article. Where people go wrong when trying to stay objective. The mistake. Waiting until you're already activated to try to manage your emotions. Why it happens? Most of us believe we can hold it together right up until the moment we cannot. What to do instead? Practice the physiological reset and internal labelling techniques in low-stakes situations first. Your nervous system needs to rehearse the path before it can work it under pressure. The mistake: confusing being objective with being passive. Why it happens: people fear that staying calm will be read as indifference or acceptance of poor behaviour. What to do instead? Objectivity is not silence. State your position clearly and directly. The skill is in the delivery, not the content. The mistake: using I feel statements as a vehicle for accusation. Why it happens: the template I feel when you can easily become I feel attacked when you do your usual thing of ignoring me. What to do instead? Keep thy feel statement about your internal state, not a diagnosis of the other person's intentions. What psychological safety actually means in practice explains why this distinction matters enormously for whether people feel safe enough to engage honestly. The mistake: believing that one good conversation will fix a pattern. Why it happens: relief after a difficult conversation can feel like resolution. What to do instead? Patterns shift through repeated, consistent application of these skills. Celebrate progress, but stay the course. Your pre-conversation emotional control checklist. Use this before any conversation where emotions are likely to run high. Number 1. Name your trigger. Write down the one or two things most likely to activate you in this specific conversation. Number 2. State your purpose. Say it aloud. I want to understand and find a way forward, not just I want to win. Number 3. Set your reset signal. Decide in advance what you will do when you feel activated. One slow breath, a short pause, a clarifying question. Number 4. Prepare your anchor phrase. Have one fact-based, goal-oriented sentence ready to bring the conversation back if it drifts. Let us focus on what we can do from here. Number 5. Plan your close. Know how you will summarize any agreement at the end. Keep it simple and specific. Number 6. After the conversation, note what worked and what you would adjust. The process improves through reflection. The real work begins after the conversation ends. Here is the truth of it: emotional control strategies are not a performance you execute in the room and then set down. They're a practice you build over time, conversation by conversation, until the habits become quicker than your reactions. The manager I mentioned at the start of this article did eventually get better at this. It took him about 6 months of consistent effort, some hard feedback from people he trusted, and the willingness to admit that his old patterns were costing him. He told me the turning point was the moment he stopped thinking of emotional control as oppression and started thinking of it as strength. That shift, from gripping tight to staying grounded, is what these emotional control strategies are designed to produce. You can apply them to your next conversation. Start there. Frequently asked questions. What are emotional control strategies in conflict resolution? Emotional control strategies are deliberate techniques for managing your internal reactions during difficult conversations. They include physiological methods like controlled breathing, cognitive methods like reframing, and communication methods like using neutral language. Together, they keep discussions focused on the issue, not the person. How do you stay calm during a heated discussion at work? Pause before responding, even for 2 seconds. Name what you're feeling internally so your brain can process it, rather than react to it. Focus your language on observable facts and shared goals. These 3 habits form the foundation of emotional control in workplace conflict. Why is emotional control so hard to maintain under pressure? When conflict feels threatening, your brain triggers a stress response that impairs clear thinking and sharpens emotional reactivity. This reaction happens faster than conscious thought. Emotional control strategies work by interrupting the response early, before it takes over the conversation. Can emotional control strategies be used in remote or virtual team conflicts? Yes, and remote settings actually offer built-in advantages. You can mute yourself to breathe and reset without the other person noticing. You can type a response and delete it before sending. The physical distance also reduces the intensity of threat signals that fuel emotional escalation. What is the difference between suppressing emotions and practicing emotional control? Suppression means pushing feelings down and pretending they're not there, which typically makes them stronger. Emotional control means acknowledging what you feel, then choosing how and when to express it. You are not hiding the emotion. You are directing it so it serves the conversation rather than derailing it. How long does it take to get good at keeping discussions objective? Most people notice real improvement within 4 to 6 weeks of consistent practice. The skills themselves are simple to learn. The challenge is applying them under pressure, which requires repetition across real situations. Start with low-stakes disagreements before bringing the process into your most difficult conversations. Thank you for listening. If this article helped, the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time will take you the rest of the way. 115 scripts ready to use whenever you need them. Visit emonblackthorne.com to get your copy.